developing the quality of listening. Listening to the world around us. Listening to our bodies. Listening to our thoughts, feelings, memories, emotions. Developing the listening to the inner sound, the sound of silence, is just one method of developing this broader quality of receptivity. Paying attention to this present reality and being open to receive what's here. To learn how to listen without grasping holds, without pushing away. So that very listening heart embodies the quality of vijja, of knowing. Is that very consciousness which is infinite, formless, radiant, all-inclusive, where the things of the world are totally present, our sensations, our thoughts, our moods, our loves, our hates, long and short, coarse and fine, pure and impure, painful and pleasant. The whole world of the body and the mind. The external world. The universe is all present, but is not a burden. As we develop this quality of open-hearted listening, training the heart to be that very vijja, be that quality of awakened knowing, to be that reality, to rest in that reality. Then we're no longer creating a sense of a separate watcher who's watching the world out there, but more there's what I call an unentangled participating. We're not afraid of letting the world in. We're not afraid of there being a body and thoughts, responsibilities, relationships. We're not trying to keep the world at a distance out of fear or rejection, but rather the heart fully participates in the presence of the world of the people around us, the buildings, the land, the country, the world of our thoughts, memories, ideas. There is a participating, a joining in, a connectedness. But that participating is unentangled, not caught up, not sticky with identification, mine and yours, me and you, self and other. This is why it can be unhelpful to think in terms of being a witness or just the watcher. But rather, to not be afraid of allowing the world to be fully known, fully present, fully immanent. Thus come, tat agata, come to thusness, here, present, involved, attuned, but at the same time unentangled, still, spacious, awake, infinitely open. Tata gata, gone to suchness, transcendent, unentangled. This practice of inner listening, one of its most helpful aspects is learning to simply listen to our thoughts rather than to believe in them as absolute realities. To hear our loves and hates, to listen to them rather than to believe them and follow them. To know the thought, I hate you. If you were different, I would be happy. To know, that's just a thought. To know the thought, I love you. You're mine. I belong to you. You belong to me. To know that as a thought. Feelings of irritation, angry at a particular sound that we hear, of a machine or the sound of a crow, passing aeroplanes. To know what the thought creates around that. Why do they have to fly overhead? Don't they know we're meditating here? To know, that's just a thought. As we develop inner listening, the more we can learn to listen to our thoughts, then we know from our own mindfulness and wisdom, the thoughts that make sense, the thoughts that match the experience of others around us, the thoughts that are just random impulses of jealousy, fear, desire, anger. The more we learn to listen to thought, the more the heart is able to respond rather than to react. Feelings of aversion. I hate this, I can't stand it. To know that as a thought, there's some space around it. The faculty of wisdom can consider, is there something to say here? Is there something useful that can be done? Is some adjustment going to be useful? No? Yes? What looks like the best way forward? There's space around the thought, space in which mindfulness and wisdom can function freely. If there's a blind reaction, there's no space. There's just, I don't like it, get rid of it, can't stand it. Get away. And we spin on the wheel of birth and death, on and on and on. one of the best ways of training the heart to not entangle in thought, to not blindly believe it, take it all as absolute, strangely enough, is to highlight the very thoughts that are there. So when the mind desires something, some food, or a place to be, or an attractive person, just to be able to catch that thought, to highlight it. I want that. That's delicious. More of it for me. That's good. If I get that pie, I will be happy forever. Or if it's aversion. You know, we're all supposed to be trying to be good Buddhist-type people, full of loving-kindness. So when a feeling of aversion crosses the mind, we don't like it. We think it shouldn't be there. But ironically, sometimes the best way of working with aversion is to take that very thought. I hate you. If you were different, I would be happy. If you didn't exist, the world would be better. You know, thinking the unthinkable. When we spell it out, we catch the thought, catch it, bring attention to it, and then we spell it out. If you were different, I would be happy. We can't even get to the end of the sentence before it falls apart. It's my experience. As soon as that's brought into the clear light of awareness, like dew in the sunshine, it dissolves. Disappears. Like ice in the sun. Can't hold together. Or desire. I want this. If I had the new iPhone, I would be happy. Yes. For about 3.5 seconds. Stephen was telling me yesterday a study they did on people buying new cars. When you buy a new car, it's a pleasing and satisfying feeling for precisely 3 days. Then the bills take a lot longer. I want this. If I had it, I would be happy. When we spell it out, it's obvious how limited that is. So, as we work with the mind, learn to listen to our thinking. We can work with it in this way, to catch that thought. Highlight it, make it clear, and then watch it collapse. See how that it really has no place to land when there is clear wisdom, clear and well-established vicha, knowing. To watch them fall apart, to dissolve. And then as they dissolve, when there's that kind of laughter, like, oh yeah, right. Just stay with that. The sense of humor that we have, how ridiculous. The loving, desiring mind, always wanting, seeking. The hating mind, always rejecting, blaming. How shallow, how small. how absurd they are. Absurd in the way they feel so important. If you were all like me, life would be fine. It's ridiculous. If everyone thought the same way that I did, the world would be a perfect place. It's ridiculous. So in that that seeing, it's our faculty of mindfulness and wisdom, satipanya, that realizes the joke. That's crazy. It's ridiculous. And to then stay with that spacious, open quality, when that absurdity is seen, felt, known, as that structure of that thought falls away, let the heart stay with that. Just as after the question of, what am I? Who owns this moment? In the same way, let the mind stay with the gap after that thought dissolves, falls apart. One time they made a group photograph of all the monks at Wat Phananachat in Thailand, the monastery for Westerners. And one of the monks was a Photoshop artist, and he pasted in the face of the abbot on the heads of every single monk. Then he gave the picture the caption, "The Perfect Monastery." It's a joke, but unfortunately it's not a joke. Each of our minds works in different ways, creates different patterns of thought. Some it's easy to see are just empty and insignificant. Others seem like real, valid assessments of truth. But for each of them, for every thought, listen. Receive them, explore them, catch them in the same way. Listen to what they're saying. Question it. Look at it in this way. And when their meaning, their substance dissolves, let the heart fully know that spacious quality, timeless, selfless, unlocated, present. Let the heart rest with that open, clear, unlimited presence. when we engage in this kind of exploration, say you pick up a particular thought you habitually believe in, like Ajahn Sumedho found that he was regularly blaming his parents for all his suffering. If my father had hugged me, I would be happy. And so it can be the case when we bring a thought like that to mind, regular, familiar, usually believed in, when we invite that into the silence of the mind, state it clearly, sometimes it can be the case that it falls apart. But sometimes it's the case that it doesn't fall apart. And what arises is, yeah, if he had hugged me, I would be happy. That there is still a substantial and very effective clinging going on. That's how it is. Sometimes there's this way of reflecting and exploring. It causes things to be seen clearly and to dissolve. But sometimes they don't dissolve. The clinging carries on. But I do want that. And I want more of it. I'm sure I would be happy if I had it. One of the helpful teachings in this respect that Ajahn Chah gave was to say 50 or 70% of the practice is knowing that you should let go, but not being able to. So at least we can know, I'm not going to let go of this one yet. This is a keeper. I can't drop this one yet. I really do hate you. But at least we know there's that thought, I hate you, and you're the cause of all my problems. We know that's a thought and a belief, even though it's still saying it's got substance. This is one of the most helpful teachings. 50 or 70% of the practice is knowing that you should let go, but not being able to. Like knowing that you're addicted to cigarettes or reading. Eating cakes. Alcohol. You know you're addicted. You know it's harmful. A lot of you would like to stop, but not yet. Or like the Christian saint, St. Augustine, famously stated, O Lord, grant me purity, but not yet. So even those staunch Christian ascetics had a sense of humor. Yeah. So in that respect, to know where there's things that the depth of clinging and fear, the depth of ownership or desire, just the application of an insight or wisdom, that's not enough to break the lock. But if we're patient, persistent, steady, slowly but surely, that strength of clinging wears away. So that even the drips of water into a large steel padlock, the water seems soft and gentle. But if it drips long enough, consistently enough, the lock begins to rust, to decay, and eventually falls apart. Though in the application of this kind of practice, this reflection, this exploration, it can be helpful to be aware of those areas where the clinging is dense, the identification deep. It's to know that, to feel, let the heart fully know that clinging. Simply to consider, this is what it feels like. This is what this particular attachment feels like. Here it is. With no commentary, no blaming, no explaining. Just as simple and open and as clear as possible. Here it is. This clinging feels like this. And that simple awareness, that simple receptivity to let the heart feel the burden of clinging, the pain of attachment. The more fully, directly, clearly that is felt, then the more effective and the more quickly that clinging can dissolve, fade away.